Welcome to the Wave Podcast on FM 91.7 WHUS Stores at the top of the hour. I'm your host, Bill Trofesky. And for more, be sure to go to podcasttheway.com, follow on Twitter, Instagram, whatever you can. And my guest today is Ruben Dataya. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming out. And tell the audience a little bit about yourself. What are we talking about today?
So I'm a journalist from the Netherlands. And together with Austrian photographer, we have interviewed 11 protagonists who used to struggle with an eating disorder. So they are men who used to struggle with an eating disorder. And with this project, we wanted to kind of take away the stigma that eating disorders are always linked to females. And eventually this project ended up in exhibitions around Europe, and we made a photo book called A Story to Tell, and that's also the name of the project, A Story to Tell.
Nice. So yeah, today we're going to talk about your book, A Story to Tell, all about men's eating disorders, because yeah, everybody likes to think it's about women, but you, it's both too, but you wrote a book called I Want to Disappear Too, which talks about women's eating disorders too, right?
Actually, Mafalda, that's the photographer that I work with. She made a book about that. I only participated in the book about men's with eating disorders.
Okay, I was just curious. So everybody thinks eating disorders are women related. What can you tell me about men having it?
Actually the symptoms of the eating disorder itself aren't that different from females. The core of an eating disorder, which is mostly relies on hidden traumas or emotions that haven't been processed yet, or that they don't know how to express this. This is mostly the core of eating disorders. They are kind of the same. The difference that I would say is mostly that men, and especially with anorexia, that they tend to focus a lot on sporting too, because they want to have a really muscular body. So I think that's the difference between females and males with eating disorder. And in general, from the statistics, at least the statistics that are known, it's also less common for men to have eating disorders. But as a disclaimer to that, the medical field still kind of struggles to reach this group because there's a lot of shame on it. So the statistic might be higher than it is actually now written in research.
Yeah, I found academic.oup.com. said 2.2% of men are affected with eating disorders, but that could range from 0.8 minimum to like 6.5 percent maximum. Yeah. So yeah, they definitely think it's higher up. But one of the things you said, like men like to be like strong and in shape. If you have an eating disorder, wouldn't that kind of make you weak and like too skinny, kind of like the opposite of what you would want to be?
Yeah. So it's kind of illogical, as you could put it in these words, I would say, to exercise a lot and then eat not that much because you won't really grow muscles. But what we asked him this also, and they said that the anxiety to gain weight was more heavy, and that's why they developed this restrictive eating behaviors, I would say. Yeah.
Because they get like a lot of anxiety in their head, kind of like shouts in their ear about if you eat, it kind of freaks them out or gives them a lot of anxiety. That's what feeds into it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What are some of the past traumas you found with the people you interviewed for your book?
It's really
they don't want to share it. You don't have to share it.
Sorry?
Oh, wait, actually, no, it's in the book, so it's already shared. Yeah. No.
Yeah, it's in the book. So, and I always said to them that they were really in control of what they wanted to share or not, because I don't want them to have things in the book that they rather not have in the book. So, yeah, there could be traumas about everything. It could be in their social environment, like with friends or family. We also had somebody who had bad experience with sexual abuse. We also had a protagonist in the book who were like bullied on school. Like a lot of them actually were also bullied as a kid. So this also creates traumas and problems with self-esteem. Yeah. So these kind of things, I would call them traumas, I think. Yeah.
I did a podcast episode a while ago, episode 5, and actually for the people on the radio, it's going to be 3 days ago, but that same guest is doing a TED Talk in Hartford, but I think you can find it online. But yeah, so that episode was about this porn addict who had like a massive porn addiction and had this whole crazy story. But the reason he said he got into it was because it gave him, because his backstory was very sexual trauma, and he said it gave him control of his environment. So is it like, these people get an eating disorder because they like to have control in their life, gives them some structure?
Yes, I would say it like that. Think, a lot of addictions also still rely on control, like even smoking cigarettes, I would say. And eating disorders, you could definitely perceive them as addictions too. And the thing, like the symptoms that makes it really a good way of controlling for eating disorders is that they can weigh themselves all the time. They can weigh the calories that they eat every day. So this is like, these are like quantitative matters that they can weigh every day. So you can get really obsessed by these kind of matters and the control over this. Control is definitely a big factor that these men also, why these men developed an eating disorder, I would say. Yeah.
You said weighing food. So like, do they have scales with them and they'll eat, like how much weight a day would you say they'd eat?
How much they would eat per day? Or
yeah, like what? How many grams or like pounds, or I don't know how to, what the scale would be.
Yeah, so actually we have kind of two rules in the book, and that is that we don't talk about the amount of calories that they took and not about the weights, because it can be kind of triggering for people with an eating disorder who read or listen to that. I could say that it's far less than advised. And even to the point that doctors said to them, that their heart would probably fail if they would continue doing like this, or they had to be hospitalized and fed with, how do you call this in English? When you, with the nutrition.
I'm sorry, what kind of word are you looking for? Like a what?
So when they plug in the nutrition, feed? Like a forced nutrition.
How you feed? It's a... Yeah, one of those things you put into your arm for keep you alive. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, okay. So this, yeah, like forced nutrition also. So it was like quite heavy stories. A lot of them were kind of balancing between death and being alive. So this kind of pictures how bad their situation was, I think. Yeah.
I saw him on the website. One of the pages you shared about the book had kind of told a story like what you just said, where one person was hospitalized, almost died. What caused that person to get to that point?
At a certain point, there was even one of the protagonists who said that he fully quit eating for a couple of days, and he fully quit drinking also for a couple of days. That's how bad it can be, and he ended up in the hospital pretty quickly, of course. Yeah.
All right, so
This was one of these two protagonists who got this forced nutrition also in the hospital.
Yeah. So what are some of the eating disorders talked about in the book?
Sorry?
What are some of the eating disorders? Like there's anorexia, bulimia, binge eating.
Yeah, so it's these two, anorexia, bulimia, binge eating. And then we also have other specified feeding and eating disorder. And this is actually a combination of patterns of these three eating disorders, but they kind of overlap. So then doctors tend to put it in the diagnosis of other specified feeding and eating disorder.
They overlap, so you can have like bulimia and anorexia, you can have both of them?
Yeah, so for instance, you can have anorexia, but you're still on a healthy weight, then this would go into OSFET mostly, I would say.
Is it possible?
And OSFET is the other specified feeding and eating disorder, sorry. Yeah.
All good. Is it possible to have anorexia and binge eating? Because I feel like those are the opposite side of the scale.
Then I would say that it's bulimia, kind of, yeah.
Okay, where you binge eat, but then you puke it. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. But all these symptoms kind of overlap a lot of time, and it's really up to a doctor to say in which category it fits. And I would say that from what the stories that I've heard also, what the protagonist shared is that every eating disorder has so many different patterns that it's really personal for anybody, for itself. Like your eating disorder could be way different than mine, for instance. So it also needs a different way of approach in treatment.
Each person's like a whole different color, kind of.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, I would say. Yeah.
What can you give me an example? Like, what could one person have and then another person have that's like completely different?
Let me think of that. Yeah, so for instance, with really extreme versions, and fortunately we haven't heard it from the people, like the men sharing their stories in the book, but some of the people who have anorexia also use laxation liquid, which is a very diehard version of, I would say, like a symptom to make yourself more skinny. Yeah, or people will puke, but the other people don't do that. This is a difference, I would say. Yeah.
Okay. How did you even meet these people?
So it actually started with one of my best friends who used to have an eating disorder, anorexia. And at the time that I was friends with him, I didn't really notice that. And he told me a couple of years after that he recovered from it, that he used to struggle with anorexia. And he also told me that he was kind of afraid to relapse back into it because he didn't really understand where the anorexia came from, what the underlying problems were. He just learned to eat normal again and to do sports in a normal way. But he was still afraid to relapse. And then I made an article with him that I went back to his family and to friends, but also to psychologists and to academics to understand more about eating disorders. And then this article got published on Vice.
What was the article? What's the name of it, do you know?
Yeah, but it's in Dutch though. It's only on the Dutch Vice, I think.
So the audience knows, you're out in Greece right now, right?
Yeah, I am in Greece right now, but I'm originally from the Netherlands, yeah. So this was one of the protagonists, and the other protagonists, we approached them like via people that we knew, or via NGOs, or via the network of my father, the photographer. And this is how we found the people willing to participate in this project, yeah.
Okay. While like meeting these people, what's the most surprising thing that you didn't expect to find out?
I think most surprising. So in the book, we kind of focus a lot on the underlying problems of the eating disorders. And we kind of discovered from the stories that a lot had to do with that they kind of struggled with the image that society has on masculinity. So how a man should be, how a man should behave, and that they didn't really fit in this pattern. And that's also one of the reasons that they developed an eating disorder. So actually, I didn't thought that this would be such a big topic in the book, but eventually it turned out to be quite a big topic. So for instance, a couple of protagonists, they found out that they were gay. And this struggle with their sexuality and identity kind of also helped in developing the eating disorder.
So was it they were trying to be like a masculine man and they got the eating disorder, or they didn't accept the sexuality part?
Yeah, so they didn't accept it, or their environment didn't accept it. We also had one protagonist who was from a very religious family and environment, and their environment didn't accept his sexuality. And then a lot of conflicts occurred in his life between him and his family. So yeah, this doesn't really help for your self-confidence. So then the eating disorder kind of occurs as a coping mechanism to deal with all these problems, because you kind of distract yourself by focusing on the eating, by focusing on the restrictive behaviors, the waiting that I said also. And because you immerse yourself into this, you are not thinking about the things that are actually going on in your head. And that's really what an eating disorder does. That's kind of the cure of an eating disorder, I would say.
Yeah. It's like a cover up for like another issue going on?
Yeah, yeah, and mostly multiple issues, I would say. Not specific like one thing, but multiple issues, yeah. Okay. It's also kind of logic that this masculinity issue occurred like in hindsight, I would say. Because I think a lot of men never really learned how to share their emotions. So then this conflict only becomes bigger. I think in Western society, it's still a bit taboo as a man to really open up about your emotions, I think. Yeah, I don't know if you agree with that, but...
Yeah, I don't know the step. I'm pretty sure men have like higher suicide rates and like depression and stuff like that for that reason.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I'll fact check and throw that out. But I'm pretty sure, like, I'm very confident that's right.
Yeah. I'm also pretty confident. Yeah.
And like you're saying, masculinity is an issue with which feeds into this. But again, like, an eating disorder has the stigma of just being like a woman's issue. It is a majority of, and is also a majority woman's issue. So does that feed into and sort of make it even worse?
Yes, definitely, because that's also kind of how we start the book with this question. And a lot of protagonists share that they were really lonely in their issues. So first step, like, they didn't really acknowledge that they had an eating disorder because they thought it was for girls or for a woman. So they kind of denied it. And then most of the time it was that after a very long period of time, someone in their environment started to recognize it, and then they went to the doctor and then they got the diagnosis and then they started accepting it. But this took a very long time, and it took probably longer than it would take with girls. So the problems in this period of time kind of develop already way much more heavier than it would develop with females. So this makes it even more problematic, I would say. And what was your question again?
What was my question? Oh, it was men's... issue of masculinity is what feeds into this eating disorder. So then I said, like, oh, an eating disorder not being masculine, making it worse.
Yeah, it makes it worse because there's a lot of shame on it. Yeah, that's the conclusion of the story I wanted to say. Yeah, there's a lot of shame on it. And also, that's also what I wanted to add to it. When they were having treatment, they were mostly in groups with girls, mostly. So they felt very lonely in the treatment center also. And the kind of eating disorder, which is also sometimes like a voice in your head just saying things to you, then the eating disorder really said like, oh, you don't belong here because you're a man and you just eat healthy. Look around you, there are only girls here. So that also doesn't help, of course. No.
It seems like you're getting the bad end of the straw, and then you're getting the bad end of the straw again, and then you're getting the bad end of the straw like again and again. Having this kind of eating disorder with the, like having a masculinity issue related eating disorder.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that is actually true. But I will also want to say that a lot of protagonists in the book got over their eating disorder, and even two of them are now working as a therapist, helping other people with eating disorders, three of them actually. So that's also kind of the message in the end of the book, spoiler alert, that you can get over an eating disorder. Yeah, which is very important, I think, also, that this is kind of the message of the book. Yeah.
That was one of my later questions, like if you completely overcome it, but that's good.
Well, completely, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we can get to that later, maybe. Yeah.
Okay, I'll bring that back up. You ever, you know Netflix, you watch Netflix, right?
Yes.
You ever see the movie The Social Dilemma?
Yeah, I know that there's also a guy with an eating disorder in there, right?
You what? Maybe I missed it. You could be right, though.
Oh, no, I haven't watched it, but I heard somebody saying that. But maybe it's not true.
Yeah, the reasons I bring it up is because they talk a lot about, like, social media causing anxiety. It's a great movie I recommend to people. But, like, okay. It's just constant, like, social expectations, stuff like that. But one of the things they also touch up on is like models and being like photoshopped and everything's sort of this fake image. So does social media and the Photoshop models feed into this image problem that these people have?
I would say that it definitely feeds it. But one of the therapists that we spoke about this, he kind of made the distinction between a trigger for an eating disorder and the underlying problems, and that this is kind of more a trigger to start into this disordered eating behavior or sporting behavior. But I do think that it kind of, it also has a lot of influence on it because the expectations kind of raise in general of how you should be as a girl or a boy or a man or a woman. Yeah, also because like maybe I should give kind of an example. If you, for instance, with an alcohol addiction, you maybe, this is not a good example. Maybe with smoking, you could kind of start smoking because it kind of looks cool. When you're like 15 years old, you think that it looks cool. But maybe there are like other things going on in your life that you feel a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety, that you don't belong to the group. And that's actually why you start smoking. So this is the same with social media, I would say. Yeah.
You're gonna say alcohol at first, like looks cool, right?
Yeah, but it doesn't really, right?
It doesn't, yeah. But at the same time, it does, like, even like in even like drugs in America, like Xanax and stuff like that, it has this sort of like appeal to it, like, oh, take these drugs, look cool, be out of your mind and stuff. That's one of the reasons we have like this whole epidemic and we have all this, even alcoholism and everything like that. So no, it's definitely true.
Yeah. No, let's say like that. Yeah, it's true. Also, of course, we have a lot of influence from the music business kind of glorifying this. Yeah, so
yeah. And Spotify just had their yearly wrap where they show you your favorite artist of the year and your favorite genres of music. And my genre is very, like, it definitely, exactly what you just said. Like, it definitely, like, glorifies drugs. It definitely glorifies all this stuff. And yeah. How five rappers or six rappers, like, overdosed in the past year now because of it. So it's definitely one of those things where, like, I mean, it sells, though, so they're going to keep making it to sell and make money. But at the same time, it's definitely feeding into it.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to bring it back from that to Mazin disorders.
Yes.
So one of the things you mentioned was, well, earlier was that somebody was able to eventually notice the warning signs and get these people to help. But what were some of the flags that they noticed?
Flags that they noticed. For instance, they started sporting a lot, that they were weighting their calories, that they were weighting themselves a lot. But also that they are socially, this is what happens a lot of time, that they are socially kind of hijacked by the eating disorder. So they isolate themselves a lot. The eating disorder is a lot of times also kind of bubble that you are in for yourself. It's for them even a safer environment. That's how they described it, because they really identify themselves with an eating disorder, or they feel safe in the control that the eating disorder gives them. So they start neglecting school, they neglect friends, and they kind of become very isolated. So these are definitely signs if you see that as somebody in your environment, that you could maybe think like there's something going on there, maybe related to an eating disorder. Yeah.
Okay. Well, sorry, this sounds like a bad question, but when people have an eating disorder and they see themselves as fat, so like they have anorexia or bulimia, is it that when they look in the mirror, they see themselves as like a skinny, like very skinny, but they see that skinniness as being fat? Or is it like putting on goggles where they actually just see like a fat person there?
I think it's not a bad question, because I also ask it to the protagonist.
Good.
It's mostly like they always focus on certain parts in their body. This focus kind of enlarges the tiny fat that they're still there, which is normal, like just normal body fat. And then this enlarges a lot in their head. So this one of my best friends, Matthijs, like one of the protagonists, he also said that when he looked at other people, he could just rationally look at other people and say like, oh, this person just looks normal. This person is maybe a little bit fat, but then this person also was actually a little bit fat. But when he looked at himself, it was very distorted. So he would focus a lot on his belly, for instance. And even though he was already pretty skinny, then he still thought that he should lose weight. Yeah.
So it doesn't feed into like other people. Like another person could be normal weight, but they think they see them as normal weight and not like skinnier than fatter than they are.
No, exactly. No, it's just totally like only their own self image is distorted. Yeah.
I heard this a while ago. I don't know if it's true, but I heard an eating disorder is the hardest addiction to overcome. Because like a cigarette, you can like put it away or try to stay away from it, or alcohol or something like that. But an eating disorder, you have to eat every day to stay alive.
Yeah. Yeah, it's recommended to eat every day at least. Yeah, definitely. So I would say that it's probably true also, because a lot of eating disorders also develop during puberty. And one quote that the protagonist also said, like one of the protagonists who is also a coach now for people with eating disorder to help them, he actually said that his eating disorder started when he was like 11, 12, something like that. And he said, like, if I would get it on a later age, I would probably be hooked up on alcohol or drugs. But because you're so young and you can't really reach that yet. You can't really reach alcohol or drugs. So you start to create an addiction on food because it's the one thing that it's really approachable for you. Yeah. So then I think what you're stating is definitely true, that it's more difficult because you're facing it every day. Yeah. And it's also, I think the second deadliest, now I have to put it in good words, mental illness, second deadliest mental illness in the world. Yeah. So that's also kind of states how dangerous an eating disorder is. Yeah.
Maybe it was a different year, but I saw a TED talk, and this one was like 13 years ago, but it said it was actually the highest death rate of all mental illnesses at the time.
Yeah, it kind of depends because now it's getting a bit theoretical, but if you take drug abuse into as a mental illness also, what they kind of decided to do as a disorder also, a couple of years back, I don't know which year actually, then you could state that this is the deadliest. But if you take that one away, then it's actually the deadly, then an eating disorder is the deadliest mental illness in the world. Yeah. Wow. So it kind of depends on the terminology. Yeah.
So yeah, the death rate's so high because people, they just really avoid food to the point that they're starving themselves to death.
Yeah, yeah. So heart failure is often, but also, I think heart failure is the biggest cause within this group then, I think. Yeah,
it's crazy because I always picture, like the bad struggle with it and all the stuff along with it, but you never actually picture the, it sounds like a statistic, but that's insane. Each person is more than a statistic. Everybody says with like COVID and whatnot, but it's true.
So yeah, like in the Netherlands, you have this documentary, which is really famous. Like I think almost every Dutch person has seen it, and it's called Emma Wil Leven, and it's a documentary actually about Emma who films herself during her life and her struggles with eating disorder. And then in the end of the documentary, she also passed away. So I think that's one of the faces that, about the behind the statistics. Yeah.
All right. If somebody finds out they're having an eating disorder, or I guess even the people in your story, how did they overcome it?
First thing is to find professional help, to also get a diagnosis, because this mostly helps to kind of acknowledge it yourself also that you have an eating disorder, and professional help. So they went to treatment centers or to therapists, and they started to really focus on the underlying problems, the emotions that they hadn't converted yet. To kind of get into a more positive life, to be more kind to themselves, and to learn to talk about their emotions. These two things, being kind to oneself and learning how to talk about emotions, are, I would say, the two most important things to overcome this. Yeah. From what I've heard from the stories and the people that I've talked to in the medical field.
So it seems easy to just say like, oh, figure out like, just start eating more food or make yourself eat, but it's really like that doesn't work as well. You have to actually get to like the root of the problem.
Yeah definitely. Also in the stories, like there are still some treatment centers who tend to focus a lot on the feeding behaviors. So there are actually like two protagonists in the book, and they went to the same treatment center, which was one of these treatment centers who focused a lot on the eating. And they learned how to eat normal again. And then their BMI was normal again. And then they instantly had to go out of the treatment center because they were cured, as they said. And instantly when they came back home, they started to have these restrictive patterns again. So this is, I think, a really good example that focusing on food doesn't really help. It's really about the underlying problems. And that's what all the protagonists state, that these underlying problems are the things that they have to solve to get out of the eating disorder. Yeah.
What causes some of the people to relapse, or how do you avoid relapsing?
It's a good question, because we did have some protagonists who also relapsed. So yeah, to just continue listening to your emotions and talking about your emotion, also avoiding stress in your life. If you feel stress because of whatever it could be, this mostly increases tendencies to go back into the eating disorder again. So for instance, we had one protagonist, and he had started a new job, and this job was very stressful for him. So then also the eating disorder kind of crawled back into his life. Yeah.
Okay. How, I mean, it's a whole different topic, but like stress, how do you like avoid stress? Because everybody's always stressed out all the time.
Yeah, or maybe like know how to handle stress and take moments to also relax and don't put too much pressure on yourself, I would say.
So
what I want to add to the previous one, like, because now it just feels like, yeah, just don't get stressed and then you will not relapse. That's of course a little bit too much, but just I meant more like to just keep listening to your emotions, kind of. That's more what I meant, I think. Yeah.
I should have asked this earlier, but besides the obvious having the highest death rate, or second highest death rate, depending how you look at it, what are some of the other health problems some of these people have from like not eating?
During the eating disorder, you meant? Or
Yeah, during the eating disorders. Like, what kind of does it give you, like, I don't know, bad vision or bad stomach problems or
So mentally also it was most of the time combined with depression also, which kind of logic, I would say. Physically so when you're really skinny, automatically your body starts to grow more hair to kind of protect yourself from the cold outside. So this is something that happened a couple of times at Protagonist. Also, like, problems with, I don't know if I pronounce this word right. English is my native language, vowels.
Yeah, it seems to make sense, like, the follow-up.
Yeah, exactly.
But growing a lot of hair, I find that odd, because if your body's low on nutrients, I feel like it would use up nutrients to grow more hair. But I don't know, I'm not a biologist.
Yeah, but it's mostly to kind of protect yourself from the cold outside. Of course, because you have less body fat, it also, what we heard a couple of times, is that it actually hurted for them to just sit on a chair because it was just painful.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's a small side effect I wouldn't think about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, I think I'm just about out of questions. Are there any final messages you want to get out for the audience?
Yeah, I would say that if you see somebody in your environment who might be struggling with an eating disorder, or if you think that you might be struggling with an eating disorder yourself, then I would really advise to seek professional help, and also to start talking to somebody that you trust, could be just friend or family member, to start talking about what is going on, because this kind of relieves the pressure on yourself also. And the end message of this project, Story to Tell, is also kind of that you can overcome an eating disorder. So there is help out there. Do you mind if I also notice the website and where you can order the book?
Oh, yeah, of course.
So the website is where you can order the book is storytotell.info, and we ship globally so that you can learn more about men and eating disorders. Yeah.
It's a well-received book. I think I saw some good awards going alongside with it. Again, I'm American, so I don't know what Butu Gallery means, but...
Yeah, we did some nominations and awards. It's true. Yeah. It's well-received. Yeah, I'm glad that it's well-received also. Yeah.
Sounds good. All right. Well, then for the audience, you'll see a link for all that in the description too. And for people on the radio, be sure to go to podcasttheway.com to find more. This is WHUS Stores, FM 91.7 at the top of the hour. Again, podcasttheway.com, follow on social media. And as always, deuces.